Welcome back to the Doc Talks podcast with Shane and Cambry.
Let's go!
That was a new way of doing that.
I like it. It was simultaneously.
We had like a harmony going.
Yeah, we were harmonious.
Harmonizing. Well, guys, for our
it's been a minute.
Avid listeners, we kind of took a little break off for Thanksgiving.
We did. Happy late Thanksgiving, everybody out there. Hopefully everybody had a fun and exciting Thanksgiving. Where are we going with this?
Everywhere, really.
We are. I think we're going to be kind of a getting to the end of the year palooza. Can we, you know what we should talk about?
What?
I think we should talk about your analytics you got today. I think that would be awesome. Why don't,
guys,
we got to thank our listeners, all 10 of them now, are we going to say?
We'll see.
Apparently it's more than 10. I can't even say 10 anymore and keep a straight face. That's a lie.
Can I keep yapping? Let me pull them up so I don't tell any lies. Okay.
So as she's pulling it up, so I think this was Spotify's analytics. They do like a year-end, I don't know what you call it.
A Spotify Wrapped for creators.
A Spotify Wrapped for creators. That's a mouthful. But no, it was, I can't believe it. So this is our, Logan or Cambry, does anybody know, is this our 11th episode?
10th?
10th episode. 10th episode here. So we are as green can be. I think it comes through that we don't know what we're doing, hence the technical difficulties with my backboard or drop that we had on our last podcast. Hopefully it'll stay in place today. But we've got some unbelievable stuff, and it's all thankful to you guys. So I'm going to let Cambry, is that look that you know what you're talking about now
it
or
is.
No?
It's a look that I know what I'm talking about now. You rarely get that look, but you get the look right now. Okay, everybody. Shout out to you guys. Our show is in the top 20% of videos on Spotify.
That is unbelievable. So nine episodes in, and we are in the top 20% of Spotify. That's awesome. So thank you guys. Thank you, listeners. We appreciate everybody tuning in and doing that.
You guys are amazing. That was the biggest one.
That was the biggest one. We had one, wasn't it? Like we're like in the 86%. People listen to
our episode longer than 83% of other.
Yeah, so a lot of you guys are listening till I start talking, and then you guys tune out. Actually, if we run the numbers, technically, I could take the blame off of myself, because if they're getting to a point like halfway or a little bit longer through, and then they stop listening, that's technically when we ask Logan a question.
That's so true.
So it may be Logan that's driving everybody away.
Logan, we might have to confiscate your microphone privileges. I'm sorry.
You guys can't take it away from me. Never.
And everybody tunes out. All right. Thank you, Logan. Just kidding. We love Logan. Logan does the most for us. So,
absolutely. Shout no, out he really to Logan. Does. So what are we going to talk about today?
Well, okay. Well, first of all, what did we do over the week that we weren't filming?
Flew.
What did we fly?
Bushmaster.
That's right. We didn't even fly that together.
We didn't. Nope. Everybody but Logan, I think, has flown it.
Sorry, Logan.
Logan's airplane and not flying it. But yeah, we got to fly Bushmaster. What did you think about it? Does anybody know what a Bushmaster is? If anybody, you want to explain what it is, or you want me to?
You explain it because you are
better. So a Bushmaster is a PA-20, a Piper PA-20 or a PA-22 pacer, basically, or tri-pacer. It's a tail wheel that's been stretched. They stretch them anywhere from about 18 inches to about 36 inches. This one's been about 30 plus inches. And it's got a lot longer wing on it. So this one's got 6 more feet of wing. It's got a massive aileron. It's got a massive flap. And it's got a 200 horsepower constant speed Lycoming in it. Kind of a monster. What'd you think? You flew it. So we've got, what do you have on there? You got TK1. I want to give Tony a shout out. TK1 Racing. It's got TK1 gear on it, so it's a 6-over gear, 3 forward gear. Right now, it's got 26-inch Goodyears. I think you guys ordered 31s for it. Going to be here, change those out. But yeah, you want to say you've got some tailwheel time. You've got a 185 time, and you've got some Citabria time. Do you have any other tailwheel time?
That's it. Now the Bushmaster.
Now the Bushmaster. So you want to give a pie rep?
A pie rep. Yeah, it flew good. So most of my time is in a 185. And pardon my language, but that thing is a bitch to fly. It's really hard to take off and land. Flew the Citabria. That was much easier tailwheel to fly. And I'd compare the Bushmaster to the Citabria. It's really stable. It won't run away from you. Little wiggle on after you touch down, but nothing crazy, really.
What'd you think about the stall characteristics?
It doesn't.
What do you mean?
It doesn't stall.
Doesn't stall. Yeah, it's got stall strips on it. It's got a big wing. It's got a cuff. And it'll just kind of hang there on the prop till the runs out of energy. Then it'll kind of just falling leaf down, but it doesn't break either way, does it?
No, it's really amazing.
Yeah. Good airplane. So, I highly recommend if anybody has an opportunity to fly a Bushmaster, check one out. Definitely go do that. They are neat airplanes. Very, very capable. We're always looking for bigger, better, faster. I know, who is it? I'm going to screw it up. I don't want to screw it up. I know Kyle Bushman's working with a company. Is it Rev? That's doing the tail wheels they're doing. Anyway, they're doing a monster four place with a big wing and kind of everything else. That's very capable. And as is the Bushmaster. Some of them are STC'd. Some of them are done experimental. This one doesn't experimental. So what else have you done?
We posted the giveaway.
Oh, yeah.
So go apply for that on Instagram. You can go to our Instagram page. We're giving away a seaplane sport pilot license.
Oh, that's right. Come springtime, Coeur d'Alene.
The giveaway is open until December 9th. So hurry and apply.
Yeah.
And that was... It's been a blur. I don't think I did much. No, really. I flew the Bushmaster, went and picked up an airplane yesterday.
That was about it. Yeah.
That's not very exciting, honestly.
It's about the flying that I've done. I had running around just working really on that. So, you know, we got a bunch of pilots on here, and we may have people that are in the way of becoming a pilot. We should talk about the holidays. And now the holidays, I think, are always the best time to have your own airplane or to have access to renting.
Oh, yeah, because it's travel.
Just travel. Like it did, you know, you got almost caught up in some of the government shutdown travel.
But yeah, where was I going?
I think you just got back from Florida. You were going to go to Salt Lake for
the
holiday.
That's right. So I was going to go home for Thanksgiving, and then I was like, oh, with the government shutdown, I don't know if I want to buy a plane ticket because I don't want to get stranded somewhere. So I didn't end up going home for Thanksgiving, and then the government opened, and it was fine. But still, traveling during the holidays is a nightmare. Unless you have your own airplane.
You should get your own airplane.
Yeah, you should. Everyone should get their own airplane or rent one even.
Partner in an airplane. I've got a saying. I don't know if you agree with this, Cambry, but I like to tell people when they ask me about airplane ownership I think 60 hours a year is the magic number.
For flying?
Yeah, if you fly 60 hours a year or more, own your own airplane.
Mm-hmm.
If you fly less than 60 hours a year, rent.
Why 60?
It's when you start running the numbers, it's just enough. Everybody looks at airplane ownership as it stops with the purchase price of the airplane.
Okay.
And really, that just opens the door to that. So moving forward, it's insurance, it's fuel, it's maintenance, it's hangars, it's, you know, all of those things that pop up. The I need an engine now, or these types of things. We all three of us know, we've got a friend that's training with us right now, Justin. I'll shout out to Justin because I know
Justin!
Justin's super excited about aviation. One of the most passionate people. Awesome, awesome human being.
He's just awesome to hang out with.
He's one of my favorites for sure. Even though he has better hair than me, but that's all right.
It's not hard to do that.
That's true. But he's doing what every new pilot or new student pilot does, like searching high and low for like a screaming deal on an airplane. And every day he comes to me with a new airplane. I mean, from a 150 to a Pacer to, you know, his end goal would be a Kodiak, I think.
Yeah.
But if it's cheap and out there on, you know, between Marketplace or Barnstormers, he's finding it and he's bringing it in. So we look at it and we kind of go from there. But he would be one that does fly enough. But I also got to tell them, like, a cheap airplane is just kind of the entry point. There's a lot of other things to consider for that airplane. So, you know, kind of going through. So I always say 60 hours, less than that, do it. Or partnerships. Partnerships or groups. I know a group of, well, actually, you met him and Logan knows him. A buddy of ours, Alex.
Mm-hmm.
We're actually doing a build for him. We'll talk about it a little bit later if anybody cares. He's in a group of guys. So I think there's 10 or 11 guys in this group. And I think between the 10 or 11 guys, they've got like 10 or 11 or 12 airplanes.
Well, that's awesome.
So they've got 182s and they've got 180s and 185s on floats. They've got a twin engine airplane. They've got a bunch of them. They're all really passionate. They all love flying, but they all just kind of decided each one of them had like one airplane, but sometimes they needed a different type of airplane, so they were always borrowing. And finally, they just said, if we throw these all together, you know, they have access to 10 different types of airplanes. And it's like they only own one airplane because they're paying insurance. Mm-hmm. You know, their insurance rate's the same as one airplane, hangar, and all the other stuff. But they have a pile of airplanes. So
yeah,
if they want to go fly somewhere.
A good deal.
And they go and do it. And they go all over Canada and the U.S. And, you know, you can grab an airplane for a couple days, and it's not a big deal because they have enough airplanes.
So in Utah, I had a share in the 150.
Yeah.
That was good. I really liked having a share because then you can not, like, you don't have to be super duper worried about maintenance. And you still, like, the way we did it is every hour we flew, we still put money in a maintenance account.
Yep.
And then if there's maintenance, it's like, oh, like, whatever, just take it out of the maintenance account, and then we'll just split it six ways, and it's like, oh, like, I can afford that, whatever. And no one really flew it that much, so it was like not like there's a bunch of time on the airplane. It was a good gig. The only thing that, like, you have to be a little, like, make sure you're partnering with people you like.
That is the big one. I've seen partnerships. I've helped set up partnerships, and do it with friends. Do it with people you like to fly with. If you do it with people you like to fly with and similarities, it's always, always fun. Doing it the other way, it can get just ridiculous. Yeah, I'd give you that. But how long were you in that one? Or, I mean, your family's still in the 150.
Yeah, my brother's in it now. I was in it for less than a year, actually, because I was planning on having it for forever, for a long time, to just time build and stuff in it. And then I ended up here.
Moving away.
But we just kept it in the family. And it saves, like, even if you're, like, doing training, even, I'd say, it's not a bad idea to get a share in a little plane. Saving my brother a lot of money on training, because he's just paying for an instructor.
Yep.
So.
No, if you can afford to do that, I typically don't recommend buying an airplane for a one person for training.
No, yeah.
My reason behind that is you put a lot of time on it, you do these things, and it's seldom is it the airplane that you want to end up with once you get your pilot's license.
But I think a share.
Share's great.
And then you can resell it,
mm-hmm.
hopefully for close to what you bought it for.
Yeah, especially if you swindle your brother.
Yeah. And then you get out and you're like, okay, I just saved a bunch of money on flight training. Wipe your hands clean, walk away, and there you go.
Done and done.
Okay, I think we should talk about what you're working on in the shop, huh?
What I'm working on in the shop. Yeah, so as you guys all know, we should plug it.
Let me plug it. Say commentary and I'll show my sweatshirt, okay?
Oh, you're going to say it. Okay, there you go. So her sweatshirt, my voice.
No limits aviation. Okay.
As much as we would like to be professional podcasters, we actually have a real job.
Womp womp.
And during the summer, that's seaplane flying. Yay.
Yay. I miss it so bad. I literally am getting like seasonal, like, ugh. I just want to fly seaplanes and be warm and lay on the dock and tan.
You need to take your vitamin D. But during the winter, we actually spend a lot more time at the airport and at the shop. So 7 days a week, you can typically find Cambry or I at No Limits Aviation. So, again, some of you guys have heard us talk about No Limits. We're flight school, maintenance, charter stuff, airplane brokering, communication, hangout, coffee, donuts, blah, blah,
it's
blah.
Like
today
a
was
big,
bagels.
Like, hangout club.
It is like a big hangout club. And we do some cool stuff in there. So we've got a Republic CB in right now that we're actually doing a V8, an LS Corvette LS3 conversion on. This is an airplane conversion that I've followed for a really long time been super stoked about what it was for a long time. I think there's about 200 of those done, if I'm not mistaken. I think I read that in an article somewhere. I've never personally flown in one, been around them and checked them out. But we are doing it. So it was Robinson out of, I think his name was Brian Robinson, if I'm not mistaken, out of Canada, did this STC in Canada. And they're legal up there. You can haul them. You can do commercial stuff with them. But down here in the U.S., they are experimental, exhibition. So you can't do quite as much. You're limited there. But they supposedly are a phenomenal airplane.
For those of you listening that aren't pilots, or if you are a pilot, you don't know what a CB is, pause the episode and go look up a CB. It is a funky looking little.
If you had like a 69 Volkswagen Beetle and it mated with a Cessna 150.
And a boat in there a little bit.
And a boat. You've got the love child.
Yeah.
Of that.
It is something.
No, it's either love or hate.
It's funky. It's so ugly, it's cute.
Yeah, I would agree with you. It is just that. So we're doing that. Kind of interesting with as many of those conversions are out there. I'm going to kind of blast everybody, but that's okay. It's all in
good fun.
It is all in good fun. No, I've never seen anybody in the aviation community or car community or boat community that is so tight-lipped about a frickin' conversion.
They're gatekeeping.
Like, I'll say this. Like, I know that Robinson has moved on to other and bigger and better things. I look at their website. They've got a lot going on. I could totally respect that. Okay? Now, you spend a lot of money for these parts, and I think they're getting down to the end of the parts that they have. Okay? So it's engine mount and basically a gearbox. No drawings, no anything. And I understand a lot of it is custom one-off stuff. But after doing 50, 20, 50, 100... there's some guidance you would think out there. I've reached out to like four guys that are on social media that have these that are done of like, hey guys, I'd love to pick your brain a couple things. Like, I don't need all your technical data, like, but I'd love to pick your brain of, hey, go this route. I tried that. It didn't work out. Like, I do that all the time, day in and day out, talking to people. And everybody's like, just call Robinson and get on their website. And I'm like, okay, like, you went through it and did it. Like, why are we, you know, I mean, it's a cool conversion. Like, we should be supporting one another and do it. So anyway, I'm going to document this build on YouTube, very in-depth in detail with the help of Logan and Cambry here. We're going to document it as we go through and do it and kind of show it off. But I'm super excited about it. It's going to be kind of like a rat rod style. You know, the things that we do touch will be really nice, but everything else is going to be pretty stock and left alone. This airplane came out of a hangar. It's been sitting 42 years.
I'd say it's in like pretty good shape for...
I think it's been in the back of a hangar. Yeah, it's pretty good shape, and everything gets changed out. So it'll be a long project, but I am pretty excited about it. It's awesome. It's exciting. I think it's something that anybody, if you're into build type stuff, we're going to keep it and document it on over at the No Limits Aviation YouTube page. It won't be on Spotify or anything else, but you can go to the No Limits Aviation YouTube page and follow the build there and just see kind of some of the other stuff. To plug that, I should say, you know, our normal day-to-day is being at the shop or flying, and we have a lot of photos and videos and content from all the stuff that we do that we enjoy doing.
Yeah.
We need to be better about putting it in over there, and we should.
It's always fun to film it, and then it's like, now we have to put it all together and post it, which is fine, but it's not as fun as...
It's not as fun as doing it, for sure. But we'll do some of that for you guys out there if you guys are interested in some of that stuff and kind of going from there. I think that'd be super cool.
Yeah, no, for sure. It's really interesting that everyone's so gatekeepy about it, though. Like, I can't think of anything that I've run into with pilots where, like, everyone wants to talk about what they're doing.
Exactly. Normally they won't shut the hell up. Like, even when you're like, okay, I've had enough. Like, I don't want to talk. Like, everybody in that world is just like, I'm not talking about it. I had to do it all myself. Screw you.
So you have to do it by yourself too.
It's like, well, okay. You know.
Whatever.
I want to be the only one that has it. Like, okay, well, I'm going to put it on blast.
You and 199 other people.
Yeah, I'm going to document it all and check it out. So if you have a CB or if it's something that you wanted to do, follow along, and we'll do that. It's going to have a heck of a panel in it. It's going to have a lot of options.
It's going to be amazing.
It will be super, super cool on that.
What?
What else? What, you know, we should talk about, You know, we talked about the kind of the travel and the holidays and stuff like that. We should talk about, just because it's been an interesting week for me as a flight school owner with some weather in the greater Pacific Northwest.
Oh, yes. I like where this is going, actually.
We should talk about decision-making for pilots.
Can I tell you something?
No.
I'm gonna.
Fire away.
Someone at the flight school today, I won't name names.
Okay.
But you know who I'm talking about.
Okay.
Said that we should talk about this.
Really?
And he didn't say let's talk about him, but he said let's talk about this.
Okay. In a good way or a bad way? Was he being shitty about it?
In a good way, but he was like, but don't talk about me.
Okay. So, listen. Let's be clear here. I got worked up. So, let me lay the groundwork. So, we're at the hangar. I think I went to lunch or I did. I was gone. I was gone and I show up. And it's like snowing. It's snowing. Snowing. It's
low snow.
Low, and it's snowing. Okay. So I show up and figure everybody's going to be there wiping down airplanes or doing CFI stuff.
Ground school.
And I walk in and I'm like, huh, it's awfully quiet around here. Where is everybody? Well, come to find out, we've got two airplanes out flying. I'm like, what in the world's going on? Like, it's not the weather that you should be flying. It's not flying. So. We've got one airplane that two of our students, these are all pilots, they're CFI pilots, rented, and we're just going out to get IFR proficient.
Which?
In a training airplane. And my other airplane, I've got a very well-seasoned CFI that did all his training with us, knows my expectations, out with a student doing a long cross-country.
Now, let me preface this. I will say, I was there.
Are you going to their rescue?
I'm not going to their rescue, but throwing just for clarification, just so that everyone's not watching this and like, well, don't go to that flight school. When they left, it was VFR in 1,000. Like, it was beautiful outside, and it was not forecasted on the TAF or MOS to go shitty until the evening.
Okay.
But that's all I'll say.
But let me preface this with your preface.
Okay, I'm ready for the preface.
Is that a comeback preface?
Yeah.
So, yes, you're right. One of the things when you've got a fellow flight instructor entering the pattern as you're getting ready to take off.
Oh, no, you're absolutely right. I know what you're about to say.
And texts you and calls you and says, hey, by the way, we were just out flying in a complex, high-performance, fast airplane.
Yeah, no, for sure.
And got into some stuff, and it's coming this way. You may want to rethink about your flight in your airplane that goes 100 miles an hour.
Yeah.
Means how the airplane we're flying goes 180 miles an hour.
I guess I was just saying that more in defense of the renters.
No, absolutely. So it was not predicted, okay, guys?
But
let me say, and this is not, it's going to come across like I'm knocking people. And I think me and you could probably talk, and you could probably talk about this a little bit more in depth. But when you go out and get all your ratings and you get your instrument, you're like, I'm going to kick weather's ass. I'm going to fly through anything and I'm going to do it.
And one of the hazardous attitudes.
You all of a sudden, I think, become a hazardous attitude. Just your whole body, your whole thought process. And then you become a CFI that's got 800 or 1,000 hours. And you're like, I got this every day. You know, I can go out and do it and it's not going to be a big deal. Well, let me walk you through what happened and then we can go from there. So both of them go out. I walk in the hangar and I'm like, this is not good. Like, where are these airplanes? So we've got one that's flying in directly from the west. And there was like two cells, one over us and one to the west of us.
And south of
us. And one to the south of us. And there was some clear in a million in between.
Yeah.
But the cells were 00 or darn near and visible precipitation. Oh, snow. Yeah. And we're flying Beechcraft Sports Musketeers, low horsepower training aircraft. So I see the two guys that rented coming back from the west. They had actually were texting back and forth with one of the CFIs and said they were going to land and may need a ride. It's great. That's a good decision, right? That was the best decision you could make. They came in, they circled over one airport, realized they could get to a bigger, closer airport. And so they did that. They came in and they did that. And actually, me and you went and picked them up out of Feltz. We got to take a ride over there to get them. The other one was to our south, due south. All of this area is low level, so it's not that big a deal. Mountainous rays, it's not there yet. Low level, they were coming north. But there was stuff that wouldn't have been, I think...
It would have been a little spicy, sporty.
Would have been spicy. So they come in, come through it. It looks like they're diverting to Feltz as well.
And that was their
clear shot. I think it was like, what did they say it was? I think it was like 4,000 feet or something. Yeah. So it was fine. You could get into there, no problem. So they come up and they get 5 or 6 miles from Feltz, and I see him do a hard 90.
To the right.
To the right to the into east. Us. So I said, okay, so we're following him on FlightAware. And I'm like, that's not a good decision-making there. And I could see him descending, right? So I know what they're doing. I know what they're doing. They're trying to scud run in to Coeur d'Alene. Now, I'm guilty as charged of doing that, okay? Typically, I'm not in a 160-horsepower training aircraft. I've got something that you may have a fighting chance. But when you're 2,000 feet AGL, descending at 100 miles an hour through snow or potential snow, things can change really rapidly in that. Now, you've done some flying with me in the King Air.
Yep.
And we talked about this as we went through it. You know, yes, the CFI was IFR rated. He's actually an IFR instructor. Very capable there. The airplane was not any of those things.
Mm-hmm.
So when you get into it, but he's never really had a whole lot of actual. You've got some actual in a King Air.
Yeah.
Right? You saw some things, and I'm not going to speak for you. I think me and you've talked about it, so I'll let you talk about it. You saw some things with icing and weather that may or may not have, and I don't know what you're going to say here, changed your attitude on icing conditions and how quickly it potentially could fall apart.
Well, that's it. Is it's like in flight training, in trainers, you're not flying in icing conditions. You're just not. That's just the reality of it. I would hope you're not, at least. And so you don't get to see what it's like to get icing. You just talk about it. But the person talking to you about it has also never seen icing. And they learn from a person that also probably hasn't seen icing. So it's just a bunch of people talking about theory, but no one's ever really done it. So I didn't even really, like, what does it look like to get icing in real life? So when I went in, you know, on these King Air trips, you can pick up icing, and it happens like this. It's like a light switch. It's like, you're fine, and then all of a sudden it's like, wham. You look outside, you look in front of you. Oh, my windshield's completely frozen over. I can't see in front of me. We have heated windshields. You still can't see in front of you. It happens so fast. It's crazy.
And you can pick up a lot of ice quickly in the right conditions. Not all conditions. Right. Sometimes it's real small. Sometimes it's whatever. But sometimes
it has the potential to be shitty bad.
Real quick. And the visual precipitation. So they make it back to the airport. We'll finish that. So no airplanes in the grassy fields. They all make it back to the airport. So they get out of the airplane. And as you would, and I'm not condoning him, my CFI was pretty excited when he walked in the hangar. That was the coolest thing. He is pretty worked up. You know, never done that. Blah, 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 blah. You wouldn't believe it. Well, I kind of lost my...
Marbles?
My marbles a little bit spilled on the floor. I was not as enthused as he was, and he didn't understand why. And I'm going to explain to you guys why, and hopefully this helps another CFI or another pilot. I don't care if you're a CFI or not, okay? A couple things that concerned me is we have to teach good decision making. Now, I don't know if everybody does this. Part of our pre-solo requirements at No Limits is filling out a personal minimums worksheet. As we tell our students, we don't care what that is, right? The FAA has certain regulations. Your minimums may be a lot more than that, maybe exactly what the FAA is or whatever.
We do care if they're really out there and unsafe.
Unsafe, but
super conservative, it's like whatever.
Yeah, if you're super conservative, we talk through it. Mm-hmm. It's what I typically have everybody do. Like, tell me why, what's going on, What's your thought process here? And let's, you know, crosswind is kind of one of those things.
Yeah.
You typically put a limitation on crosswind for solo stuff. But then there comes a point in time you have to be able to land a crosswind. We don't want you to be unaware of crosswind. And oftentimes, people are pretty conservative on crosswind. But once you learn the techniques, it's very manageable up to the limits of the airplane. You can stay center line. Yeah. You can kick the rudder. You can do a lot of types of things. We teach you how to do that. But your purse minimums are pretty important. And I make it abundantly clear that is a hard line. I have personal minimums, okay? I've seen a lot of accidents. I've had friends killed in airplane accidents. I take my personal minimums very, very seriously. I don't want to be a statistic. I love aviation. I love flying. I will, you know, a hot rod guy and do all the stuff. But if it's X and it's more than, I'm not going to go fly. I've made that decision at my age that I'm going to call it, right? When I was younger, maybe I was going to push it, but I didn't back then. So we have personal minimums. Well, when we're out with a student, okay, and what they did is they ended up getting a they requested a special VFR, which basically allows you to fly closer to the clouds and anything to get into an airport. So they were legal doing what they did. But my biggest, a couple gripes were, one, you're in a training aircraft that if it got bad and you started picking up airplanes or picking up ice on that airplane, it's going to turn bad real quick, real quick.
And you don't have a lot of options.
You don't have a little options. If you're 100 miles an hour, 2,000 feet above the ground, and that airplane starts descending at 500 foot a minute because you picked up ice and you don't have enough power to power through it,
You're gonna land on the ground.
You're going to land.
Not at the airport.
Yeah, and that can happen. But never being in that predicament, you don't realize it. Second thing is, and probably the thing that frustrated me more, is we are there, or you guys are there, I'm talking to you CFIs out there, you are there to demonstrate good decision making to your students. Good decision making to a student, even though it would have been a pain in the butt, would be to take that airplane and land at a safe airport that has plenty VFR that we're going to stay out of potential icing conditions.
Well, that's exactly it. And you think about it, it's like, okay, if a CFI wasn't in that airplane, okay, that student now knows that, or thinks, I should say, that he will be safe doing that because he was okay that one time. I would not want my student to go do that because they don't have the experience. They don't know. And it sets the precedent that if you do this, oh, we were okay. So I guess it's okay to do that and totally safe and I won't get hurt or it'll be fine. There won't be any issues. So you don't want to like teach a young student that's really impressionable that's okay and safe because it's not always that way.
Mm-hmm. No, you look up flight into IMC conditions. Look at the accident rate. You know, everybody's got a plan. And this is, I got this excuse. I had a plan. I said, great, tell me your plan. Well, I would have turned around and went to Spokane, right? Mm-hmm. That is everybody's plan that flies into IMC that stall spins and has died. I can just turn around, right? What are we taught in training? Every FAA book. We just do a coordinated 180-degree turn and
fly
get
out
of
it.
And that's great, unless you're in a... If you're in a hot rod airplane that's got a bunch of power and a hell of a wing on it, yeah, you could probably do that. In a underpowered training aircraft... That 180-degree turn, if you picked up enough ice that the wing's descending, if the airplane's descending because you can't hold altitude, which is what happens when you pick up ice, that's going to be real bad real quick, right? If you're descending at 500 foot a minute, you know, and you're at 2,000 feet, you've got 4 minutes before you're on the ground. So you're not covering a lot of distance and not doing a lot of stuff, and you're not setting yourself up for anything. And if you had to go around... You're not going around. Like, you're just not. So, anyway, that was kind of my... Think about... This is for the CFIs. For you pilots out there, like, whatever. If you've never flown IFR, have somebody take you, right? We all love taking passengers. In an airplane that's very capable of flying IMC. And go experience picking up some ice. I've personally said, we said it today, I said it to you, I want to take all of my CFIs that have never experienced ice. I want to take them in the King Air. We're probably going to go here in the next couple weeks. We'll run over to Seattle and get lunch, or Oregon or something, and go grab some lunch. And we're going to climb up through and pick up a bunch of ice and descend down and pick up a bunch of ice and show them how fast
it happens
at different altitudes. Because sometimes, yeah, you may only have icing for 500 or 1,000 feet. And typically, it's not more than 2,000 feet up high. Here in the Pacific Northwest, when you're descending, there's often times that you'll have 8,000 foot of icing or 9,000 feet of icing. Even when I'm coming down alone in the King Air fast, I can pick up a crazy amount of ice.
Right.
So
just be smart. Make good decisions.
Make good decisions for your students. If I would have had two CFIs doing that, I would have been fine. Well, here's a great example. You yesterday went to pick up the airplane that was left at Feltz.
Mm-hmm.
So you took another CFI with you. You didn't have to get a marginal, or you didn't have to get a special, but
no.
it was borderline.
It could have been.
You may have had to have requested.
Mm-hmm.
But you guys both knew. You guys briefed it. This is what we're going to do. And there was a lot of high clouds in between. Mm-hmm. There was a couple things you had to, you know,
dodge,
bebop around and dodge, but you were able to get in and out. You guys went over there with a game plan, and we didn't have a student that were teaching bad habits. And it was probably a great learning experience for you and or, you know, our other CFI.
Exactly.
Of, hey, this is clouds. This is what it looks like. And, you know, you guys knew the area and kind of did that. But I just hate seeing us doing it with a student. And I got one more thing, and then I'll leave. In our flight instructor's defense, he said, I talked to the student about our options and he was okay doing what they did. Guys, again, I'm going to scream it from the mountaintops. Your student trusts you not to kill them. If you say this is an option, they're always going to say, sounds great.
Yep.
Always. They're never going to be like, I don't know. They're going to be like, oh, so-and-so says do it. Let's effing do it. We're going to be good. They put, since day one, right? Let's go out. You're give them the controls on your takeoff roll for their discovery flight. You know, they have no idea what they're doing, right?
Mm-hmm.
You're saving their lives. You have their lives in your hand. I mean, from that moment when that throttle goes to the firewall for the next 50 hours or whatever it is to get their private pilot, like, they've got all the trust in you. They have to, right? Or they're not going to be able to do it. They put it all on you CFIs. So you have to stay diligent about the right decision-making for those people. And guys, going to a different airport, trying to push it into that airport, I've got friends that are dead now for making poor decisions. Don't be a statistic in aviation.
Just be smart. Think about what you're going to do before you do it, and you'll be just fine.
Oh, and use your OHOs. Right? So that's what I got. Oh, the TAF looked this. The MOS looked like this. It was supposed
it
to be.
It wasn't forecasted.
It wasn't forecasted. But as soon as they got up to 1,000 feet and they looked around, they would have seen the wall of death that was headed their way.
Yeah.
And they probably should have turned back around. But anyway, that's my my rant over my bad decision-making on CFIs 101.
That was a good rant.
Was it?
Yeah, it's like informational.
I think it needs to be said.
You got to learn from your, like, everyone's mistakes. Like, the classic saying, or the regs are written in blood. Like,
yeah.
You got to learn from the mistakes. So I think not talking about it is doing it a service.
Yeah, no, for sure. For sure.
So.
Yeah. Other thing we should talk about this a little bit. So for all of you student pilots out there, especially during this time of year, this can be a, I'm going to bring you in on this.
Okay.
Well, not that you'll know where I'm going with this.
Okay.
This is going to be a two-parter, I think. Flying during the winter. You saw me talk to somebody yesterday about when to start flying and good time, bad time.
And where.
And where, right? So I want to go to Arizona because that's going to be the best flying, okay? Or I want to go wherever. Or, okay, if I go to No Limits, what does wintertime look like? Well, yes, if you come here or go to someplace in areas that have potential
wintry
conditions, you could have some days bumped. Now, out of the three of us in this room, We've got somebody in this room has been bumped on a check ride for a commercial a couple times.
The man behind the
man,
camera.
The myth, the legend, Logan.
The Rogers boy, B.O.I.
Logan, how did it make you feel?
There is not a more stressful and heart-dropping thing that you feel in aviation, because you're climbing that peak to the check ride. And right as you're about to go over the top of the mountain, it gets bumped. And you realize you still got another 1,000 feet to climb before you have to actually do the check ride.
That was a great way to put that, Logan. Wow.
I can't appreciate that. So, yeah, we all get bumped, right? I mean, sometimes just weather, you've been bumped for a couple different things. Not only has it been weather, you were bumped with just DPE, had things come up. You know, we were going to do your initial commercial in a seaplane.
And then
that didn't work out. So, you know, there's things that come up, okay? Now, I get it. And, you know, either you got weather or you go to a place like Florida and they just can't get a DPE, right? You could have the greatest weather every day and then you can't get a DPE.
And
it still
doesn't
matter. 3 months
for a check ride.
Yeah. So, or, you know, so a lot of people are like, I don't want to go there because of weather or these different types of things. Well, you heard me kind of talk to a parent. Or actually, excuse me, it wasn't a parent. It was a gentleman yesterday. Yep. I've talked to a couple different people this week, but a gentleman yesterday that asked that question. Hey, should I go somewhere else? Or should I do it here? And or should I wait till...
Spring.
I'm going to let you kind of talk about what you thought my response was to that and what your take is as a CFI and somebody that works at No Limits, what you think, did I do it injustice to the student or did I sell it right and did I do the right thing? I'm curious what you
say. Yeah, so I've never heard this spin on it or this perspective ever, and I've never even thought about it like this. So I was like, you said it, and I was like, oh, wait, that's so true. I didn't even think about that. Like, that is amazing. So the student came in. He was worried about starting flying now because he was worried they wouldn't be able to fly that much because of the weather. And Shane was like, well, like, you got to look at it like this. The days you're not flying now, you can spend doing ground school. And those days you spend doing ground school are days you don't have to do ground school when the weather's good. So instead of doing right now, you can start flying and do ground school every now and again because the weather's bad. And then in the spring, when the weather's good, you won't have to do that much ground school because you already got it done in the winter and you can just go and fly. I was like, oh yeah. Shane's like, you don't want to be spending days where you could be flying in the classroom looking outside wishing you could go fly when you could spend days in the classroom right now knowing you can't go fly. I was like, oh shit, that's so true. So that's just the reality of it. Like, you're going to have to get that stuff done anyways. Might as well get the ground school knocked out now while the weather's bad. And then in the spring, you just fly. And you're still on the same trajectory timeline. Mm-hmm. It's just, you're just changing when you do things.
Yeah, I mean, you fly when you can fly during the winter. You know, and I love this, and a lot of people don't realize this. There are days, a lot of days, that you can't fly in Arizona during the summer.
Oh, geez. You're just like, wherever you go, you're trading the devil you know for the devil you don't, you know? You can find the bad anywhere, and there's no such thing as the perfect place to fly. Except for Alaska, in the summer, not in the winter. But, like, you go to Florida, like you said, it's like, okay, well, I don't know.
Thunderstorms,
you have to wait forever for DPEs. Whatever. I don't know what their DPE situation is down there. You go to Arizona, well, they don't have shitty weather in the winter, but they have a different shitty weather in the summer called it's too hot to go and fly today.
It's only 120 today, yeah. So we're good. In our Cessna 150.
Yeah, so it's like, okay, you're just flip-flopping the months that are bad. So, you know, no matter where you go, you can find bad in it or you can find good in it. Yeah.
The difference was this gentleman yesterday, you know, and let me preface it, if you're just, you know, depending on what you're doing, right? But he wanted to go zero to super pilot, which would be all of your CFIs, right? A 9-month program that we offer. And so you've got a lot of writtens to get done. You know, and I use the example, a private pilot. I think the average private pilot at no limits, let's just use the flat rate of 50 hours it takes before your check ride, okay, of flying, of actual flying. You're going to have somewhere between 32 and 35 hours, if you don't lie to yourself, of ground.
At least.
On top of that 50 hours of flying. So almost hour for hour, at least two-thirds of the hours or three-quarters of the hours that you fly, you're going to spend in a classroom.
I would argue you spend more in a classroom, actually. Logan, what's your take on it?
Honestly, for me, it's been pretty 50-50.
Yeah.
Like, you spend half of your time in the air, and then the other time, you know, the other half of that time is you're debriefing it, or you're, you know, talking through what you're going to do, or just catching up on some stuff that you're missing for, like, your written, or, you know, whatever it may be.
Yeah, for me, like, if you count your self-study, too, for me, I think it was 2 hours of ground for every hour of flying.
Okay, and I would agree, and that's the stuff that so many CFIs and nobody wants to talk about, of what that looks like.
Yeah.
And I don't know why. I mean, it's you're going to pay for it. You're going to do it. You're going to put the time in. And when you're doing like a zero to hero package, there's a lot of writtens you can get done during the winter.
Oh, yeah.
Like, if you get all of your writtens done, you can really just focus on flying. And it really, you're not having to break it up and really focus on learning of all the stuff you have to learn on the different types of things, you know? I mean, and being prepared for all of that stuff. And even when you're consumed by it, like somebody in this room, sometimes you are not have everything laid out as prepared, even though you've got everything you need. Sometimes it's not as laid out as it should be. And you potentially think about going to a check ride, and then you realize that you screwed something up.
But anyways.
Circling back.
I wonder who that could be.
But no, I mean, there's a lot of little things like that. Like, guys, just get out there and start flying. Like, stop making excuses and do the fucking work. Excuse my language.
I say that all the time. I love it.
I do. It's just, bleep. I want to do a shirt. Yeah, we bleeped it out. But no, I mean, you know, you're going to have to go and do it. You're going to have to put time in. Listen, I never liked classroom.
I don't know anyone insane. Who does.
I know people that do. They don't mind reading the books and doing all the stuff.
Must be nice.
Yeah, but it isn't me. But no, I mean, you know, kind of think about that too, guys. If you're out there and you're coming into aviation with as a career change or things like that, like, it doesn't matter where you're doing your training. Just go and do it. Find a flight school that's being honest with you. Find a flight school that's telling you all the stuff you need to tell you, and kind of do that. And you know, look about it. Like I said, I know a local flight school here that their CFIs were doing cross countries with students and not landing at airports, charging them for it. Not landing at airports, like CFIs.
It's not considered a cross country.
It's not considered a cross country if you're not landing at the airports. They're just flying over them. Hey, how you doing? Smell you later. Keep going. But what do? Straight line is not a circle.
Yeah.
Just, you know, hate to call it, you know, a thing like that. But no, find a flight school that's treating you right, and go and do it. You'll love all of the things that come with it, and the freedoms. Oh my goodness, the freedoms you get when you get to go fly.
There's nothing better.
Because you were getting like, what's the opposite? What would be like the airplane version of hangry?
What?
The other day when I sent you out in the Bushmaster, you were getting like
fangry.
Yeah. Like flygry. I don't know.
Oh, like, oh my gosh. Yeah, because I miss the seaplanes, but nothing does it for me like the beaver on floats.
Well, I think you came back with a smile on your face and you weren't being bitchy.
An ass. An asshole. I am an asshole when I don't fly, you guys.
After flying the Bushmaster.
Yeah, no, for sure.
So, no, go out and fly. Go out and fly. If you own an airplane, try to go fly once a week. And I don't think anything's more rewarding than taking somebody that's never been flown before.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Have I ever told you the story? We're probably getting close to wrapped up, but I will tell you the story of real quick of how No Limits came about.
Oh, yeah, you told me about how you wanted Logan to start flight training.
No. Even prior to that. So, Logan was in a school. It was like a private church school. That's why he's so religious nowadays. sorry. I forget what type of school it was, but it was a church school. And it was a pretty small pre-K classroom that he had there. And the teacher knew that I had airplanes and had a hangar at the airport and wanted to know, because the school was close to the airport, if they could do a field trip to the airport. So I said, sure, absolutely. It'd be the greatest thing ever. And there was like 10 kids, right?
Yeah.
So I said, yeah, come to the airport. It'll be great. I'll get a bunch of pizzas. We'll do, you know, a pizza thing and have the kids come out. So, and I don't even know if Logan remembers this, but it was like, yeah, okay, great. So, you know, and they didn't have buses there. So the parents had, somebody had to bring them. So we show up and I've got an airplane there and they were all young kids. So yeah. I've got an Avion that's got a sliding canopy. So we get pizzas. And there's some picnic benches at this airport in the Fallbrook Airport. Shout out to the Fallbrook Airport. Phenomenal. They've got a viewing center next to the runway. You don't see it very often at airports. It was badass. Picnic benches, all the stuff. That's so we got awesome. The kids up there. And I shuttle the kids down, put them in an Avion, three of them in at a WAC. Headsets on them, talking, doing all the stuff. Canopy wide open, and do high-speed taxis down the runway. I didn't want to fly with kids.
That's
back
awesome.
Then. So to a six-year-old, you were flying. Like, yeah. You got noise, and there's wind blowing, and you're talking on a headset. Like, it was the greatest thing ever. And I called it Pizza and Planes Day. And we had typically on events like that, like, because you know all the other parents.
Yeah.
Like, you got one parent that brings four kids, right?
Right.
We, for every kid in that classroom, almost every kid had two parents there. Like, they all showed up, and the parents wanted to go for rides.
That's
I'm like,
awesome.
Listen, I don't have this much time to do all this stuff. I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll take your names, and I'll take you for a free flight. Because it was in a small town. I'll take you for a free flight throughout the year. So I did. I took all of their names, and I gave every one of those family members a tour over town. I mean, it was a 20-minute deal just for fun. I took
That's
them
awesome.
Up, and I was doing it on the weekends. I'm like, you come out, we'll run around and do that. So I thought that was done, and we didn't have to do it, and I did all my things. And I think I flew like 200 hours that year, like extra doing stuff. And then I get a call the next year, and it was, I think Logan had moved on. I don't even think Logan was at the school, and the teacher's like, hey, would you be willing to do that again? And I'm like, sure, why not? It was fun.
Yeah.
Like, whatever. She's like, okay, that'd be great. I'll call you back and do this stuff. What day works? And I set it all up. She called me back. I said, well, just roughly, you know, how many kids so I know? Well, instead of doing the one pre-K class, now it was five pre-K classes. So it was like, I don't know, 50 students, 60 students. I've got 100 parents there. I've got, you know, 20 pizzas to make this happen. We did it. Yeah. I had to bring in two other friends with airplanes so we could do that. And that's how No Limits really started. I was going to set it up as a 501c3 for that. And I did that. I did that for 5 years, I think.
That's so cool.
I flew thousands of people. Thousands. Because same thing. They all wanted to go for rides. You know, you can't charge. You can't do anything like that. So I took all their names. And throughout the year, for the next 364 days, I would, on the weekends or at nights, because they were all local in a small town, so they could come down just about any time. And I would take them up for 15, 20 minutes. They'd see their house and, you know, kind of do a big, huge pattern over town and do that. And that's how I did it. It was planes and pizza. And that's how I originally
so
set
cool.
it up. Yeah,
wow.
It was pretty special for me. It was pretty neat to introduce that many people to aviation. And you don't realize how many adults, like, that aren't pilots or ever going to be pilots, want to do it. And it always surprised me of how many parents were taking days off of work. Like, they were losing money to come to an airport. And it's what I always say, like, there's fences and you can't get on an airport and you don't know what's going on.
Yeah.
And it's kind of scary even as an adult. Like, how many people came out and would do it? And it was like, it was pretty cool because we had one of the pizza places that were helping donate. Because they're like, what do you do here this one day? You're doing a lot for the community. We appreciate it. We want to help out. And they were doing it at cost or whatever we were doing. I don't remember. I mean, it was super cool. And it's something that, you know, you always have like the caps or the, you know, all of the different types of, not Civil Air Patrol. What's the one that does the
Young Eagles.
Young Eagles. You had the Young Eagles program, but you only get one flight.
Yeah.
You know, basically one flight. And I've done some Young Eagles flights. And shout out to Young Eagles. Like, hey, all those people are offering a lot of money and a lot of their time and a lot of stuff to be able to go and do it. But, you know, we took people up all the time, and I did a lot of flights. So I've probably got, I bet you I have 2,000 hours of flight time doing that around that trip around Fallbrook, California.
Awesome.
Like, legitimately, it was so much.
Wow.
But I loved every minute of it. So anyway, that is how, and then we came up here and did that. But that's how No Limits actually started.
That's sick.
Aviation stuff. It was pretty fun. Yeah, it was all because of Logan and his little snot-breathing buddies.
At church school.
It was a Lutheran school. That's what it was. It was Lutheran. Shout out to Christ Lutheran, I think was the name of it, wasn't it? Christ Lutheran in Fallbrook, California.
I thought it was Zion Lutheran.
Or Zion. It was Zion. I apologize. It was Zion.
That's right, awesome. Shout out to them.
Shout out to them. It was super fun. And all the teachers there, they were all great. But we really loved doing that. That's all I've got. Sorry, I've been kind of a chatty Kathy.
That was,
I took the podium from you.
That was awesome.
But we will be back. We'll get some more guests in here. Hopefully you guys, it sounds like everybody loved Dawn.
Dawn was a hit. Do we need to have Dawn on again?
Dawn might have to just be a permanent staple. Yeah,
Dawn
He's gonna
is
replace
the
us.
Third
it's
guy.
Just Dawn's Doc Talk. Yeah. No, we
Dawn
did have
talks.
Fun. It was super fun to have him. I've got some people in the works. I wish we would have brought you know who in.
He wanted to.
Did he want to talk about it?
But he was like, oh, but I don't know.
There's nothing wrong. I mean, you know, it would have been good turning, but we will do that. But no, so again, guys, like if you want to see our day-to-day stuff, this will drive us. I'm going to throw it out there on here so it makes us do it. We're going to put more content out on the No Limits YouTube page, No Limits Aviation YouTube page. There's some really old stuff. What do you say? It's cringeworthy. Some of the old stuff. You could see Logan rebuilding a Navion landing gear actuator and Mason. Because I used to have so many people ask about, like, it's such a big project. I'm like, whatever you were probably 12. My 12-year-old son can rebuild it in, like, 11 minutes. Like, I think you can rebuild this and work with your AMP.
That's
to
hilarious.
Do this. We were freezing our butts off in the shop, horrible lighting with a cell phone. It was brutal, but we did do it. But, no, we will start putting some cool builds up there. We've got some Navions we're finishing up for people. And just our normal day-to-day stuff. So we will put some content up there. We have good cameras. We're still seeing that. And we still do have, if anybody's wanting shirts, we've got a super cool shirt coming your way. It'll probably drop the
early
end of the week or early
week.
Next week. Yeah, early next week. So we still do have, if you're looking, you want to read what it says?
It's our beaver, the famous beaver. It says DH2 beaver built to get wet. And poor 9-pound nose down sunken in the lake. It's hilarious. You guys, there's only 100 of these prints. So if you want one, you need to get on the bandwagon and buy one right now before they sell out. And for the Christmas season, of course.
Yeah, great great gifts there. If anybody does want a sweatshirt, that is on a sweatshirt I did for me. We could do a sweatshirt.
Do
just message us and Cambry can make that happen for you.
Oh, yeah.
So we're trying to put together some cool shirts. If you guys have like an idea or like you're into, excuse me, I got hiccups, whatever type of airplane you're flying and you're like, oh, I want a Cessna or I've got a T-34C Mentor. I want one bad now. I saw one on govplanet.com. But anyway, no, if you want that, give us some ideas. We can put any type of, you know, we've played out the beaver stuff. We were just doing that for the haters, so we thank everybody that bought one of those. I think they're super cool. We still have them. We'll keep them up on there. You could buy them anytime on that, but we are trying to bring you at least one design every week or two on that and get you some cool swag out there for the holiday season.
So go check it out and buy one, DocTalksPodcast.com.
Thank you, guys, and yeah, if you made it this far, if you like what we do and you haven't liked and subscribed, I think it's like here or here or here.
And shout out to our corporate sponsor, Jim's Gunsmithing.
Jim's Gunsmithing. Thanks for all your help and everything that you do, Jim. You are amazing. If you need any gunsmithing work done, Jim's Gunsmithing in Hayden, Idaho is the place to go.
That's all we have for you guys.
Thanks for listening to us, guys.
Later.
Later.